It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. If Walls Could Talk could be the premise for a tour of vacant homes taking place this weekend in Wilkinsburg, the Wilkinsburg Community Development Corporation and Carnegie Mellon University students are combining their efforts to attract potential residents to the borough. How do they plan to accomplish this task? I'm joined now in studio by Wilkinsburg Community Development Corporation Communications and Outreach Coordinator Marley Gallagher. Good to have you with us, Marley.
Thank you, Paul.
Also joining us is Kenneth Chu. He's one of the graduate students from Carnegie Mellon University's School of Public Policy and Management at Hines College. Good to have you with us, Kenneth.
Thanks for having us.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is essspgh@wesa.fm. On Twitter, at essspgh. Is there an old house in disrepair in your neighborhood or one you know? We'd like to hear the history behind it and perhaps how you would provide a little TLC to bring it back to life. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Kenneth Chu, I understand it was the students who came up with this idea. How did it happen? How did you end up setting your sights on Wilkinsburg?
Sure. In the fall, we took a class called Design and Policy for Humanitarian Impact, taught by Professors Tim Zack and Kristen Hughes. And we were charged with looking at Mayor Bill Peduto's 100 Days, 100 Policies initiative. And based on that, we were asked to find an area where we would gravitate towards and work on. And so five of us kind of got together around the issue of blight and started a semester-long journey in discovering what we might be able to come up with to deal with blight.
So you weren't looking necessarily at Wilkinsburg right at the outset?
No, not originally. We weren't really actually sure how we were going to interact with blight or what we were going to create. And we found Wilkinsburg while we were doing our research.
And what led you there? How did you end up in Wilkinsburg? There was more blight there. We know there are a lot of vacant properties there. We can get into that a little more with Marley here in a moment. But did it just happen to be a destination that this problem of blight was more acute?
Absolutely. It's one of the areas that we identified that had a large number of vacant and abandoned properties. But also we started interviewing people from different communities. And we have some friends who live in Wilkinsburg and started talking to them, which led us to other residents in the community. And over the course of the semester, we met a lot of people who live in Wilkinsburg. And the project sort of evolved in Wilkinsburg, really.
And walk us through the process of securing grants for the project.
For the project that we actually
right.
have created? Oh, so we have worked with the Wilkinsburg Community Development Corporation to apply for grants with some of their funding partners. We've also applied for grants through Carnegie Mellon University. And we also won a cash award at a national public policy competition.
And Marley, you are with the Community Development Corporation. Describe how the face of Wilkinsburg has changed and evolved since the 1980s when the population began to decline.
Right. So, I mean, I wasn't around at that time of Wilkinsburg's decline, but...
None of us
just,
were.
Well, I don't know. I've heard a lot of stories from some of the older residents and things, people that have been in Wilkinsburg for their entire lives. And they saw it in its heyday in the 1950s when it was really great, a great shopping destination, a great place to live and go to school and raise your family and things like that. And then with the closure of the steel mills, which led to the population decline throughout Pittsburgh and southwestern Pennsylvania. And then there were some additional issues in Wilkinsburg with drugs and gang violence and such. So I've been at the Wilkinsburg CDC for about a year, a little over a year, but I started out there as a volunteer. I also live in Wilkinsburg, so I've been there for close to 5 years now. And I think just in my personal experience from what I've seen working at the CDC and living in Wilkinsburg is that there are a lot of younger people moving to Wilkinsburg, a lot of people that are interested in historic homes, and they're buying them, renovating them, and living there and even starting to raise their families there, which is really interesting.
What led you there?
I had a few friends that lived there when I was still in college at the University of Pittsburgh. I would go and visit them, and they lived in the Hamnet Place neighborhood, which is sort of a more in-transition, up-and-coming neighborhood in Wilkinsburg.
It's kind of become a hip place. I mean, there aren't a lot of, you know, housing options per se, but there's affordable housing, and it seems to have been a place or become a place that younger people, artists, people that are, I guess millennials is one way to describe the people that are moving in there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So that's been interesting. And the big Garden Dreams Urban Farm is there in Hamnet Place. So that has brought in a lot of people. And yeah, it's just it's an interesting transition.
And so what are some of the abandoned and historic properties that we might find? Because Pittsburgh and Kenneth, are you from Pittsburgh?
I'm not.
You're not. Where did you live before?
I'm from Boston, Massachusetts, and I moved here from Hong Kong.
Okay. So you've lived around different parts of the world, different parts of the United States. Now, Boston's an older city like Pittsburgh, but abandoned houses, abandoned buildings in certain cities are different from abandoned buildings here simply because of the history. And there are some pretty amazing old buildings, particularly in Wilkinsburg. Describe some of what you've encountered.
Sure. I mean, just on this tour alone, it's been pretty amazing. So the way this project kind of evolved was that we worked with the residents to identify properties that would be really good options for the tour. And the residents sort of selected five different properties for the tour. And we did that sort of randomly, really, not with any knowledge of the history of the homes themselves. And over the semester that we've been working on the tour, we've discovered some pretty exciting things about the five homes that we chose pretty randomly. So if you look at the five homes, one of the homes was owned by a man named Vernon Colville, who was an architect and engineer and was responsible for the sister bridges, the design of the sister bridges.
Now, this is going back to – we should set the scene here. This is going back to the early 20th century, 1906 maybe?
That's correct. Okay. Yes, that's exactly right, right around that time. And each of these homes has a story like that.
But tell me the story behind this home, because it really is amazing. I'm sure our listeners would be interested in this.
Sure. So this property is 816 South Avenue, and the woman who we've been working with most is actually still alive and remembers that home as a child. She is Vernon Colville's granddaughter, and she has kept his diaries from when he used to live in that house. And so we've been poring through them to kind of read what his daily activities were, kind of the history of their lives in the home. And so we have photographs from when they lived in the home, photographs of them in front of the house. So it's been really exciting to kind of unearth all of these details about the history of the family that lived there.
So he really championed that home, put a lot of work into it, you know, logged what he did. What were some of the more interesting entries in his diaries?
Well, I think it was really interesting, actually, just sort of the daily activities that he did. I mean, he would log in how many pencils he bought and how much they cost, or how many pairs of socks he bought and how much they cost. I mean, it was interesting. It was just a completely different time when people used to detail those kinds of activities. But also in his personal diary, there were notations about loan payments on a mortgage that he had, for instance. And so that's kind of how he kept track of what he owed on the house.
And one of the big things that he did was he put electricity in there, right, which not every home had that in those days.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was a pretty big, pretty interesting thing to document, I think, for that time period. So that's another important feature in addition to the more trivial little like things that he would document. But yeah.
So this was really, you know, kind of a destination, a place that people might go by in their probably not a lot of people had cars then. So they might go by in their horse and buggy and point out the house and say, you know, look at the electric lights coming from the window. So what is the state of the house today?
So today it's vacant. It's pretty run down. I don't know if Ken has more to add. We don't really have information on the inside condition, but just from the outside, as people will see on the tour, it's pretty run down, and it's sandwiched in between two other houses that are in a similar condition.
How do you get in there? If you want to know, you know, if somebody's interested in buying a property, you would have to know what you know they're going to encounter on the inside of that house, wouldn't you? So how do you, if you can't go into the house, how do you access, you know, enough information to explain to somebody what the situation is?
Well, I think in the case of this house in particular, we're fortunate to know the current owner. So she might be able to provide some information on what is actually mm-hmm. inside of the house, what people can expect and what damage is in the house and things like that.
And there's disrepair, and mm-hmm. then there's disrepair. At what point do you look at something and no matter how much you might have a sentimental feeling for it, do you say, this is just too far gone, there's nothing we can do here? How do you make that determination?
Sure. I don't know that there is actually a formula for that or a way of actually doing that. There are assessors who will do an external assessment of the home and make a guess essentially about the state of the house based on what they can see from the outside. So there are times when, in fact, you can't tell if a home is worth salvaging or if it needs to be demolished. I think it's tough. That's a part of what makes this situation so tough.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about the tour of vacant homes taking place this weekend in Wilkinsburg. It's one way that students and folks like Marley Gallagher, who is with the Wilkinsburg CDC, are bringing attention to vacant homes and trying to encourage people to maybe look at these homes and think about what they might do as far as renovating those homes if they're looking for a cheap place to live, or I should say relatively inexpensive place to live, in an up-and-coming neighborhood that is trying to repopulate itself. This is a way of attracting people to the neighborhood and getting them to think about maybe purchasing a home in that area in Wilkinsburg. If you've been through Wilkinsburg or other areas of Pittsburgh where there are vacant homes and you have a story to tell, we'd like to hear from you. 412-246-2002 is the number to call. Again, 412-246-2002. And if you have any questions about what's happening in Wilkinsburg, about how the efforts to bring these homes back to life are coming along, again, 412-246-2002. Email ESSPGH at WESA.FM. On Twitter, at ESSPGH. And again, we're talking with Kenneth Chu, who is a Carnegie Mellon University School of Public Policy and Management graduate student, and Marley Gallagher, who is the Communications and Outreach Coordinator for the Wilkinsburg CDC. Will people be able to go into any of the homes on the tour?
No. It's not legal to do so. In addition, there's some liability around that just because the houses aren't in livable condition necessarily. So, you know, pieces of the ceiling could be falling down and someone could get harmed. So,
okay, that sounds like a
good pretty
reason
good
to
reasons.
Stay
yeah.
out of the house. Do you know if vacant house tours highlighting a home's history have been done anywhere else?
No. I mean, according to our research, we think this is the first one. We're really excited that the Wilkinsburg CDC has partnered with us to actually do this pilot program.
And Marley, do you think that the attraction of owning an older home at a lower price is one of the reasons people are looking at Wilkinsburg?
I think that's one of them. That in addition to the location of Wilkinsburg, it's very close to Pittsburgh. It's close to the highway. It's right on the busway, which is a great draw for a lot of people.
And does the city have any programs such as tax credits in place to help people that are interested in these homes?
We do have a tax abatement program in Wilkinsburg. It's an incremental increase on your taxes because taxes are a major issue in Wilkinsburg, and they do discourage people from buying there. So that's one program that Wilkinsburg does offer for people that buy.
And at the end of the day, Marley, I mean, do you feel in your heart of hearts that this will really attract residents to Wilkinsburg?
I think that it will. We have over 450 people that have RSVP'd to come on the tour, and those are people coming from around the U.S., perhaps around the world. We don't really know what exactly to expect yet, but I think people are interested. Just at our office, we get a lot of inquiries every day about people that are interested in acquiring vacant property. And this tour is a way to highlight those properties, get people actually into the community rather than just calling our office, going on the website. They'll actually be in Wilkinsburg walking around, seeing what we have to offer, checking out the businesses that are there, some of the other historical buildings that are there, like the train station and places like that. So.
And Kenneth Chu, explain the role of the students in this effort, because it's not just you; it's a number of people like you, who younger people who really appreciate this old architecture. And I'm wondering if part of the attraction isn't that homes just aren't built this way anymore, and probably never will be again.
Sure. I think that's definitely a part of the attraction. There are five of us who conceived of this project. And the class was made up of students from across campus. So I'm from the Policy and Management School. There were students in the program in the class who were from the design program, architecture, human-computer interaction. And so we were from across campus. And I think that's really what made this project so strong, that we had students from very different areas of interest coming together, designing something that really took into account all different facets of what we were learning in school. And so as we've kind of moved along in implementing the project, I think it's gotten even stronger, just because the five of us do come from disparate areas, and we bring to the project kind of different ideas and different ways of thinking.
And where will Saturday's tour of vacant homes take us?
Really all around Wilkinsburg. So it's about a 45-minute walking tour with properties that are in the Hamnet Place neighborhood that I had mentioned earlier, all the way to Singer Place, which is on the other side of Penn Avenue, another historic area where the Singer Mansion is located. So really, really across the borough, I would say.
412-246-2002, the number to call if you'd like to get in on this conversation. And we have Betty in Squirrel Hill who wants to join us and talk with Kenneth and Marley. Betty, welcome to the show. How are you?
It's Debbie.
Oh, it's Debbie. Well, it says it says Betty in front of me. So
that's all right.
We just changed it to Debbie. So Debbie, thank you for putting up with our mistake.
No, I was just sort of listening in the background, and I do know one of the owners of the Singer Mansion, and if the young people you're talking to could contact her, she would probably allow part of the tour in the bottom of the Singer Mansion.
Hey, now we're, what do you think, Marley's like, I'm not sure, there's a procedure to follow here.
Right, well, we do know the owner as well. I think we're thinking of the same person, Debbie. I'm not sure, but but we do know the owners of that property as well, so I don't know.
Yeah, she lives next door to it in a house that's also in fairly poor repair, but she's working on it.
Right.
What do you think of the Singer? What are your feelings about the Singer Mansion, Debbie?
It's amazing. It's like going into an old abandoned theater.
Hmm.
The previous owner had a bunch of very interesting artwork, which I don't know is still there. So,
you know, what's interesting is that there are so many people that are interested and concerned about historic preservation in Pittsburgh. Wouldn't you think, Debbie, and maybe you know people that feel the same way you do about this, but if for no other reason than just the historic nature of these buildings, and as I mentioned before, the fact that they just don't build them this way anymore, that there would be more urgency about wanting to save these homes before it's too late. I mean, the Pennsylvania Railroad Station is a perfect example of something that came pretty close to the wrecking ball and now is thriving as a place where people can live in condos and apartments, mm-hmm. and they still have trains going through there.
Wow.
So you can do pretty cool things, can't you?
Yes, and it's sort of like a working art museum, this particular place.
Mm-hmm.
And the architecture inside is just amazing to look at, the way it used to. Where I'm currently working is also like a 100-year-old house that is actually in good repair, and it's much more structurally good than my house.
Well, I mean, they built things out of, you know, much more solid materials in some cases back in those days as opposed to now with, you know, the fake walls and all that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, the timber is very solid on the floor. It's amazing.
Well, Debbie, thanks for joining in the conversation and sharing your ideas with us. We appreciate it.
Yes, thank you.
Next time you call, we'll get your name right.
That's okay.
All right. Bye-bye. We have DJ Peep on Twitter who states, what about taxes, bad schools, and crime? And you should really explain the tax abatement problem. Not great. You're following, it's a sort of an incomplete thought there, but mm-hmm. You know, those are the perils of tweeting. But if you get the gist of that, what would your response be, Marley?
Right. So, I mean, Wilkinsburg, the schools, the CDC, the borough, we're always working to improve those things that DJP mentioned. Just this week, the school district is hosting several community meetings to talk about the state of the school district, what residents and those interested can expect in the future. And similarly at our office, I mean, this is just one event that we're using to showcase Wilkinsburg and what we have available here. So it's not all that we are doing. We're working on many different programs.
Let's go to Tiana in Wilkinsburg. Tiana, you obviously have an immediate concern about this tour of homes and the situation there with abandoned houses. How are you? What are your thoughts?
I just think listening to the tour and then knowing about some of the things that the WCDC has done in the past, it sounds a lot like gentrification to me. I know there's a pool for new economic development to come into Wilkinsburg, but I don't see that happening for the people that already live there. And also, I worry about the future of Wilkinsburg, being that a lot of businesses that might come in may not be for the people, again, that live there currently, and that the businesses that are there will be pushed out, and along with the people that have been in Wilkinsburg for their whole lives may be pushed out into other communities.
Well, Tiana, stay on the line. Marley, what about how, you know, do you agree necessarily with the idea that that this is gentrification?
I don't think it's gentrification necessarily.
That's not necessarily a fair characteristic?
I don't think so, no. And at the WCDC, something that we strive to do and will continue to strive to do is to help the existing businesses that are in Wilkinsburg. We're working on a big small business marketing campaign to show the Pittsburgh region and beyond what is in Wilkinsburg, what Wilkinsburg has to offer. You know, and we do want more businesses to move in, but it's not necessarily, you know, to push out the businesses that are there. That's not something we ever want to see happen.
And I guess I would ask you, Tiana, if not for a program like we're discussing here, what do you suggest be done with those abandoned houses?
I would think that a community land trust would be a better option for redeveloping the houses and also getting young families, people of color in the houses, people that need housing. It would make sense to me that something like community land trusting or developers willing to have an affordable rent in Wilkinsburg makes sense. It's to my understanding that a lot of the houses that are being renovated in Wilkinsburg right now are for a certain income, and they're enticing to a lot of middle-class, wealthy people, and I just don't think that's fair. And I know the tour is for vacant houses, but people that have the resources to buy those houses will be able to live there, and not the people that need to be connected to resources.
Kenneth, you're nodding with Tiana.
Yeah, I think Tiana brings up a lot of really good points.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Tiana.
Tiana.
Oh,
sorry. Sorry, Tiana.
I think Tiana brings up a lot of good points, and as we were working on this project, we were pretty concerned as well about gentrification, because I think when you're dealing with redevelopment of a neighborhood, It's a really fine line to have to walk. And we designed the vacant home tour by trying to really ensure that it would engage the residents in the community and get them involved in the process. And I think one of our goals is to try to get people interested in perhaps acquiring these properties and renovating them. But I think a bigger goal for us is really trying to get a critical mass of people and attention to the neighborhood to really see how amazing this neighborhood is and the people who live here are, just so that they will be compelled to want to help this neighborhood turn themselves around and to help these properties get turned around. We don't really know what the solution to that is. We don't know if it is acquisition and renovation. We don't know if it is demolition. We don't know if it's repurposing. But we think that if we can get a large amount of people to the neighborhood, that with so many creative, smart, talented people in Pittsburgh, perhaps that combination of people will come to Wilkinsburg and think of a solution that none of us have actually thought of yet, you know, something new, something innovative, something creative.
Well, and we may, in fact, have somebody on the line. We have Don in Pittsburgh with some ideas he wants to share. Don, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Hi, Don.
Hi.
You are on the air, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. I think that their approach is a great approach. However, I don't think it's going to work financially. There's insufficient incentives to entice the private sector to make this investment in some heavily reconstructed homes. I would strongly advise that the TDC involve themselves with a TIF, and that way they can get some developer fee out of it, as well as leverage money from foundations to underwrite the cost of the housing. Other than that, you're not going to get any, there's not enough write-off for a private sector to be involved in this.
Don, I'm not sure that our guests would necessarily agree with that. Kenneth, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I feel like you know, we are, as a part of the tour, we're offering a tools and resource workshop at 1 o'clock and at 3 o'clock, and we've invited several people who are working in the area of kind of home acquisition and blighted property acquisition and renovation. To talk about kind of the tools that actually exist that people can utilize to acquire these homes and perhaps fund the renovation process. I don't think that these are the only tools that will work. I think that all the callers who have made suggestions have really viable options to help make this community better, and I think that all of those things should be explored.
Very quickly, Marley, to wrap this up, how do you see this tour helping the future of Wilkinsburg's economic development?
I think this tour is bringing a lot of positive press to Wilkinsburg, which is, it's a major thing for our community, just because we're trying to overcome a negative perception that's held for several years now throughout the Pittsburgh region. So really getting positive press and getting people into our community are two really big things. And I think, you know, this tour will encourage people to invest in our community and want to move there and stay.
We've been talking with Marley Gallagher, who is Communications and Outreach Coordinator for the Wilkinsburg Community Development Corporation, as well as Kenneth Chu, who is one of the graduate students from Carnegie Mellon University's School of Public Policy and Management at Hines College, about the tour of vacant homes in Wilkinsburg. It's happening Saturday. Thanks to both of you for joining us to share information about it. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, meet the Black Sheep, a bus traveling team of thinkers, artists, and executives in search of ideas for remaking the U.S. economy. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's the Central Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. They call themselves the Black Sheep, and they're part of a loose guild and movement of thinkers, writers, policymakers, artists, entrepreneurs, and investors. The mission of the Black Sheep is to help unlock the creativity and voices of socially conscious innovators while providing a platform to create and disseminate socially influential ventures to a wider public. And oh yes, they are traveling the nation by bus as part of the Rediscovering America's True North tour, which this week has brought them to Pittsburgh. I'm joined now by phone by the director of the, we were scheduled to have Alexa Clay, the project director, joining us, but we have Ben Riddle, who is stepping in for Alexa. He is the social entrepreneur in residence for the Black Sheep, and he is joining us by phone. Ben Riddle, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. How are you?
Thanks. Glad to be on the show, and thanks for having us.
So what has brought you to Pittsburgh? What led you to pick this place for this particular venture?
You know, the America's True North Project, we're really traveling through 17 different cities that all have unique identities, you know, from Rust Belt towns to, you know, grassroots hubs of innovation like Greensboro, Alabama, and the Black Belt of Alabama, to find stories that are shaping the future of the American economy, but really the future of the American narrative. And so in Pittsburgh, you know, having this Rust Belt identity and really, you know, having these individuals and these folks that are choosing into their communities and are utilizing old assets in new ways, really to us represents a key moment in this period of the American story. And so we wanted to come and interview and meet, you know, some of the local change makers on the ground to see, you know, A, what the story is and what the word on the street really is in terms of a lot of the challenges that are coupled with economic development, like gentrification. We're listening to the phone call here earlier with the group of the Vacant Homes Tour. But also, you know, we want to uncover models, maybe even like that project, you know, that are emerging from places like Pittsburgh that can be adapted or shared with some of the other cities that are on our tour.
Specifically, what have you found, Ben, and who have you talked to?
So yesterday we spent a day with Catherine Chamberlain from GTEC, which is a community development corporation there in Pittsburgh, and had a day that was curated with different experiences. I was engaging with thought leaders about some of the high-level priorities for the city moving forward, and also engaging with folks from the Northside Project, you know, really who are embedded in the community, in the Northside neighborhood, working on a day-to-day basis to solve local challenges, you know, in a totally non-glamorous way. So the day in Pittsburgh really was diverse in that we had a lot of different experiences with a lot of different stakeholders, but that's how we liked it.
And is it what you were hoping to find? Has your curiosity been satisfied?
Oh, certainly, you know, and I think if there was a word for me that really can sum up the experience in Pittsburgh, it was hospitality and a pride for place. You know, from eating dinner at the porch over near Pitt to, you know, really going and meeting local neighbors in the Northside community, everyone just wanted to know that we were welcome, and everyone wanted to host us. And the hospitality, I think, really speaks to the nature of, the people in Pittsburgh.
And you guys have thrown around some interesting terms to describe the type of people that you've wanted to identify and talk with. One is misfits, misfits in education, misfits in culture, misfits in the new economy, as
right.
well as disruptors. So explain, you know, how you arrived at identifying these types of people and who you found in Pittsburgh that falls under these headings.
Well, so start off, let's go with the word misfit. So I myself actually am a college student at a university called Furman in Greenville, South Carolina. And right now I'm supposed to be taking exams, but I'm calling you from a bus across the country, you know, studying a lot of the issues and themes that emerge in my course of study at the university. And so in a sense, you know, I am an academic misfit or a misfit because I'm not playing by the usual rules, not for the sake of bucking the trend, but for the sake of pursuing deep learning and for driving positive impact forward. And so I think, you know, no matter the sector or the space, there are individuals who identify as a misfit, and that their reason for doing what they do is so much deeper than just the surface level, and they're comfortable and even willing to challenge the norm in order to see what they know as possible come to life, if that makes sense.
Let me go with a specific example here. This is somebody we've had on the show in the past, the director, executive director of the Pittsburgh Promise, Salim Jibril.
Right.
He is Salim Gubriel. He is someone that you've identified as a misfit in education. Why him for that designation?
Why Salim, you said?
Yes.
I think a lot of the work with his efforts really align with a lot of the other change makers that we're encountering across the country, be it a community like Greenville, South Carolina, where we just came from on Friday. There are these individuals that are committed to, goals and priorities that might not align with the education system at large in their region. And so, I think he fits into this broader category of individuals that are shaping maybe the future of these sectors. Does that make sense?
So it sounds like what you're saying is you identified him as somebody who's thinking outside the box, came up with this Pittsburgh Promise idea to provide scholarships, so therefore that makes him someone who's outside the norm and therefore, in your words, a misfit. I think I'm grasping the concept here. What about a disruptor? Who would be a disruptor that you've talked to?
A disruptor? I think someone like and her last name is Christian, but this lady named Lisa that we met in the Northside community, who's a social worker and a disruptor in the sense that she is creating space in a neighborhood that lacks resources for individuals to come together and to dream about their futures. I mean, she has this vision for turning an old building in a community where no one else is seeing potential into an incubator for new small businesses in her neighborhood. So in a sense, I think she's disrupting the norm or the normal perception of her community. So the word disruptor doesn't always have to have or carry a violent or a negative connotation. I think positive disruption is needed to really shake up a lot of the jaded perspectives that we encounter in our neighborhoods that are holding us back from progress.
We've been talking with Ben Riddle. He is social entrepreneur in residence for the group known as the Black Sheep, who are on a mission to disseminate socially influential ventures to a wider public and come up with ways to improve and innovate and reinvent the American economy. And Ben is a student at Furman who's supposed to be taking exams and is not. He's in Pittsburgh doing his work. And Ben, we thank you for joining us, and we hope you can make up those exams.
Yeah, well, I just am thankful for great professors and a fantastic university that really values engaged learning. So thanks, guys.
Thank you. We appreciate it. Good luck to you and safe travels on the bus.
All right. See you soon.
More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. This is 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. At the start of today's show, we looked at the upcoming vacant home tour taking place this weekend in Wilkinsburg. It's just one of a number of initiatives in place to foster economic development and improve the borough's business corridor and quality of life. This month, business contributor Rebecca Harris, director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University, is presenting her monthly neighborhood focus. The topic this month, Wilkinsburg, as luck would have it. And she is on the line with us now, Rebecca Harris. Welcome back. How are you?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good, good, good. And we're focusing on Wilkinsburg today. It's really exciting. There's so much going on there.
Well, let's begin this neighborhood focus looking at the historical background of Wilkinsburg. What do you have to share with us?
Okay, well, we heard about these amazing homes and mansions, and so let's just take it back a little bit so we have a great historical context. The borough was named in honor of William Wilkins, who was the Secretary of State under President John Tyler. And it was founded and developed by very religious European immigrants. And it has a very high concentration of churches, which is really interesting. And along with that, I think, as you might know, bars have been prohibited within the borough limits. Wilkinsburg, also separated from the city of Pittsburgh in 1871, and the city of Pittsburgh annexed it back in 1873, only to have the Wilkinsburg residents, who seemed very, you know, feisty, they protested to have the action reversed. So it's been an independent status and an independent borough since 1876. So that is pretty amazing, isn't it?
It is indeed. And what can you tell us about demographics of Wilkinsburg and its key points of interest?
All right. Well, let's look at that, and then we'll tie it back to a little bit of what else is going on. So when you look at the surrounding communities, you see Penn Hills Township to the north, Churchill to the east, Edgewood to the south, you know, Homewood and Point Breeze to the west. And according to the 2010 census, the population of Wilkinsburg is about 16,000 people. And that's about 8,000 people per square mile in the borough. About 67% are African American, 29% are Caucasian, and additional indicators with some Asian, Native American, Pacific Islanders, Hispanic, and Latino. And when we look at the housing units in the borough itself, we see about 10,000 housing units. But 38% of the households are owner-occupied, and about 62% are renter-occupied. And that gives you a sense of sort of what's happening there, although we do hear that that trend is changing, Paul.
Right. And what's changing it?
Well, I think as we've heard, we're hearing, you know, more younger people coming in. The cost of living is effective. People are looking to be near the city. They're looking at all the attributes of what seems to be and appears to be, and really with the work of the Williamsburg Community Development Corporation and all the energy there, sort of a growing and moving and exciting place to bring in younger people and change the whole face of the community.
We're talking with our business contributor, Rebecca Harris. She's director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University and focusing on the neighborhood of Wilkinsburg. Tell us about the main businesses in the area.
Yeah, as we did some research on what the businesses are, I think everyone can probably picture Penn Avenue. So what happens is Penn Avenue sort of meanders out of Pittsburgh's East End neighborhoods into Wilkinsburg. And it really branches into these wonderful enclaves of these little jewels. And you see businesses like Upbeat Records and Biddle's Escape Coffee Shop and the Percolate Art Gallery and Creative Library, and there are mom-and-pop jewelry stores and florists and family generations of businesses that have been handed down. There's also Printer's Row, so there's a number of printing companies, Mercury Press, Challenge Printing, and so that's kind of it's coming back to its roots. There's a newcomer, Tiptype, which is rescued Pittsburgh's only linotype machine, and it's reviving that whole lost art of printmaking. The borough recently hosted a pop-up creative firm from April 28th to May 1st, helping and offering discounted marketing services and design services. And what I think is really important, Paul, is despite the municipalities, really, there's some economically distressed areas, the leaders have really sustained civic pride and very strong environmental and community building efforts. And the Pittsburgh Historical Landmarks Foundation invested money into the area. There's a lot of efforts to revitalize the area. There are businesses that are getting mini grants to really work. There's facade improvement and renovation programs through the Wilkinsburg CDC. And so I think as you look at what's really happening there, you're seeing a lot of movement. There's noise at the Wilkinsburg train station might undergo some renovation. And so there's a lot of buzz going on.
And if there were such a renovation, what would be the idea behind that? What would that do for Wilkinsburg?
Well, I think when you see any of these types of renovation, whether the Wilkinsburg train station, and that's the borough and the Allegheny County Economic Development Department are exploring possible renovation of the historic train station on Ross Avenue and Hay Street. It's very much in its infancy from what we understand. But looking at that or facade renovation programs, matching grants, Wilkinsburg Borough has made available $50,000 available in matching grants for renovating storefronts. The whole point is economic incentives to get businesses and people to come back to the area, because we know that when businesses come, it really changes the face of what the community does and what it looks like. And we also know that there is an active movement afoot to really enable restaurants in Wilkinsburg to apply for and receive liquor licenses, again, as part of the incentive to make this a growing and community, not just business, but nightlife and family and restaurant event, you know, community.
When were those, do you know when those liquor licenses were eliminated?
The liquor licenses, it's been dry since 1870. And what happened was after federal prohibition was repealed in 1933, the Pennsylvania law made liquor license sales, liquor sales a local option. So the residents of Wilkinsburg voted to outlaw the sale of liquor licenses in the borough. So it's been dry for a really long time.
Yeah, 1870.
Yeah. So, you know, maybe it's their time, right? I don't know.
Yeah, 145 years later, maybe we'll see it.
I don't have my calculator in front of me, Paul, but it seems like a really long time.
Yeah, that's, well, even with my bad math, I think I've got that one figured out. Now, our guests, when we were talking earlier about the tour of vacant homes there, Kenneth Chu and Marley Gallagher, they mentioned business owners are moving to the borough in order to own the buildings housing their businesses as opposed to paying rents. As an entrepreneur, do you see this helping the economy of Wilkinsburg?
Absolutely. And that's what a lot of these improvement programs are for, the facade renovation programs. And when you put money into a place and own it, you really treat it as your own. I think rental property, certainly many people do, and that is the correct and respectful thing to do. But when you own something and you invest in ownership, you're really looking at a longer-term play. And that's something that we view as very positive.
And as always, as has become the custom with these segments, you provide us with some interesting facts that we don't know about Wilkinsburg. What are some of the things that some of the behind-the-scenes information that you can share with us?
Well, these are a couple that I love. Wilkinsburg is the birthplace of Scholastic magazines, which you might not have known. Wilkinsburg native Maurice Robinson established the magazine in 1920 as a newspaper for high school students. And as we know, Scholastic Magazine would later become Scholastic Publishing, and you know what they published. It included the Harry Potter series. So that is a huge, huge, extraordinary win. And here's another thing along radio lines. The first real commercial radio was broadcast from Wilkinsburg. It was a Westinghouse employee named Frank Conrad who operated a 75-watt 8XK from the Pittsburgh suburb of Wilkinsburg, starting in 1916. How about that?
Well, that would be 4 years before KDKA.
Right.
But so, that might be it could be disputed, but I'm gonna take your word for it, Rebecca, which would be very interesting history indeed. That would rewrite the history books, wouldn't it?
No, it was sort of the roots of the KDKA.
Is that what it was?
Where it started, and then it progressed from there. But he supervised the manufacturing of military receivers during World War I and broadcast phonographic music and communicated with other radio receivers. And so that was sort of the beginning of the inception of it. So we got to look at the real history, and it belongs in Wilkinsburg.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's great.
So will you be taking the tour of vacant homes on Saturday?
I really hope to. Yeah, it sounds amazing.
Are there any particular houses or structures there that have caught your eye in the past?
Well, as I go through the area, and one place I definitely wanted to mention is the Hosanna House, which is really a community jewel, and it's a place where so many events take place and things happen. And just on May 1st, the Youth Media Advocacy Project held a May Day celebration at Hosanna House, and there were community resources and games and music and lots of participation. So I think the whole community is great. And whatever house you're going to buy for me, Paul, that's what I'm going to take.
Okay. You got it. It's a deal.
Okay.
Rebecca Harris is director of the Center for Women's Entrepreneurship at Chatham University, and she is focusing, as she does each month, on a different neighborhood in the area today, Wilkinsburg. Great thanks to you, Rebecca.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Thank you for listening to Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. You can catch the entire show online at WESA.FM or as a podcast in iTunes. Tomorrow, in place of our program, A Life of Learning special. Until Thursday, I'm Paul Guggenheimer. So long.